Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with a professor, John Clayton.
Welcome to Schooled with the Professor, and boy, what a pleasure it's going to be to talk to Isaac Bruce. Isaac Bruce, one of the great receivers of all time, and of course, he has a podcast going on with Mark Doc Holliday, one of his teammates from college, and of course, it's called Run Pass Option with Isaac and Doc, and where can you get that and get everybody to listen, Isaac?
First of all, thanks for having me on, John. Pleasure talking to you again, man. You can go Apple via Apple and get it, and every other implement that you can see a little series where you can grab it off any podcast and just tune in. It's free. It's informative. We talk sports because we know sports, man, and it's fun.
So how'd you come up with the name Run Pass Option?
Well, I was obviously a receiver, so that's the pass part of it. And Doc was my college teammate here in Memphis, where I am right here today. And he was a running back. He was a fullback / running back, pretty good running back in his own mind. But, you know, we kind of added the run pass option with today's game, you know, with these versatile quarterbacks. And the creativity of the offensive coordinators coming out, we called it run pass option.
And again, I guess it's kind of fitting because that kind of fits what you did as a player. You're kind of ahead of your time because, I mean, you go back and you saw the greatest show on turf and the offensive numbers that were put up. I mean, and here that is, I mean, that's more than a decade or so before what you see coming right now in offenses. I mean, what was so great about what you had with Dick Vermeil, Mike Martz, and the greatest show on turf?
Well, John, the greatest thing about it was just the personnel. And I don't mean that from an athletic standpoint. I mean that from a character standpoint, because we had a number of guys that were on the offense that were selfless guys, and they cheered you on. They encouraged you. And anytime you made a big play, small play, significant play, they were there to celebrate it. They got excited about it. And that right there was contagious. So I think in all, that was the biggest ingredient that we had. And I think, you know, with teams trying to formulate what we had in today's game, first you got to start with the characters that played.
Scheme-wise, how different was it from all the teams back then?
We were head and shoulders above every team that we played, especially in our division, because, you know, we had Marshall Faulk in the backfield to the point where he was just a great running back. He could run in between the tackles, outside the tackles. And I think, you know, with the receiving core that we had and the mindset of Coach Martz is that, you know, we want to throw the ball to run the ball. I think, you know, in that time, a lot of teams were trying to run the football to open up the pass so you can get that safety down and play action and try to throw it over the top. I think we were just the opposite. I think what we had on the outside was that it was going to command a double team, and you had two guys who could really run great routes and get separation. So therefore, you had to be committed to stopping myself, a guy like Torrey Holt or Oz, whoever else would come in there. And that way, it opened up holes for Marshall to run through. It gave him an opportunity to have one-on-one out of the backfield, which is a defensive back, a third defensive back, or a linebacker's nightmare.
Well, you know, on the RPO, of course, that's the great thing about the name of the thing, because now you can compare the Rams back then with that offense compared to the Rams right now with Jared Goff and Sean McVay. And am I wrong in saying that this offense, as great as it is more run to pass, using the run with Todd Gurley to set up the pass?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, from everything that we did as a unit, to everything that they're doing right now as a unit, it's all predicated on the offensive line play and what you have up front. I mean, we had the Hall of Famer Orlando Pace, guys like Adam Timmerman, Mike Gruden-Doria, Tommy Newton, guys who could really pass protect and do a lot of other things. Right now, we got Big Whitworth at the left tackle. And these guys can open up, and when you have Todd Gurley behind you, you want to find a way to get him the ball as many times as possible, because this guy is, like I like to say, he's SEC raised. He can get in between the tackles. He can take a pounding and give a pounding at the same time. So that kind of opens it up for Sean McVay to be creative on the perimeter with the guys who can really get down the field, take the top off the defense, and really kind of carve you up underneath with routes that Cooper Kupp was running and with Robert Woods coming across on these drag routes. So it makes it tough. It keeps the defense on their heels, the creative mindset of Coach McVay right now. and you see guys running wide open, man. So it's a beautiful thing to watch.
Yeah, it really is. And of course, I mean, I guess when you look at it, the one thing that's unique about what they do right now, they add so much motion into it. But I don't know, when you look at Todd Gurley, how does he compare to Marshall Faulk, who's in the Hall of Fame? He ran routes like a wide receiver because, again, he was so precise in his ability to run the right routes and be so dangerous. How do the two compare?
Well, they're similar in their approach. I think they both have a self-confidence that, that's head and shoulders above a lot of other people at the position. And when they're facing the defense, I think what they can see and do pre-snap places them ahead of the game, which is always important, John. But when it really comes down, if you're comparing the two, I think you have a guy like Marshall who could really dominate a game running the football. But at the same time, he could really line up and be a third receiver. I think that would put, Marshall just a little bit ahead of Todd right now. And experience plays a part in that, too, because I think Marshall has seen it all. Gurley, he's still pretty young as far as, his playing career is concerned. But I think he's getting there. But, if I had to choose, thank God I don't. I always go with number 28 because of the experience, his explosiveness, and what he could do pre-snap.
Yeah, no doubt. And the one thing that's kind of interesting now, Gurley had a knee injury in the last few weeks of the season, some that kept him out and some that kept him a little limited in the game. And it looked like what was happening is that even when he was healthy toward the end, once they lost Cooper Kupp out of that offense, it took away because one option where now you can do a little bit of doubling on Gurley on the things that he does and then put a double on one of the other receivers.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's the importance of what McVay wants on the field. So in the beginning, we'd had this three receiver set, that we always started a game off with. So you can say Cooper Kupp was pretty much a starter along with Robert Woods and Brandon Cooks. That's really going to push the defense back. So when that element gets taken out, you have a young guy like Reynolds, who I think was chopping at the bit to get in there, and he's been fairly productive. So if we're talking about who could step in for Cooper Kupp and who could really be that quote-unquote X factor this weekend versus Dallas, I think it'll be Reynolds because his job becomes even more important. He has to not only keep that same level of production, but make sure that he can add on to it. That was the mindset that we had when we played. And I think, being able to continue to have that three wide receiver formation back there will help Ty Gurley a lot.
Yeah, but that's the one thing, because I noticed that there doesn't seem to be a fear factor in Josh Reynolds yet, in the sense that, I think the thinking is, hey, if he catches 9 to 11 balls, fine, as long as those 9 to 11 balls don't go to Brandon Cooks or don't go to Robert Woods.
Absolutely. I mean, those two guys, Woods and Cook, I mean, these are guys who went over 1,000 yards this season. Like I mentioned, they can take the top off the defense, and at the same time, they can push the defensive back and come out of that break and still keep a drive alive. So a lot of it will be focused on Reynolds this weekend. And, man, hopefully he comes alive and makes big plays and keeps drives going. And I think that with the addition of C.J. Anderson, man, I think that may help Todd. He's been really, really productive this 2 weeks that he's played with us. And hopefully he can get a couple of carries this week to kind of spell Todd when he needs to be spelled.
So what did defenses try to do with Marshall, you, and Torrey Holt? What kind of defenses did you tend to get?
It's funny. Now that we've all retired, some of those guys have been enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You kind of meet some of the defensive backs and the defensive coordinators that we went up against. And to a man, I think, the common denominator was that, when they were sitting in their meeting rooms, they would always say, listen, we're going to get double team myself and Torrey Holt. So we're going to guarantee that, this game isn't over early, because if you don't double team us, before you know it, at the end of the first quarter, we have 21 points on the board. So what you want to do is kind of force us to run the ball and get it the long or the hard way and try to pound number 21 as best you can. But at the same time, their focus was on stopping the passing game and really just quelling that part of our offense and really forcing us to run the football as best we could and try to slow play it and slow kill it, and hopefully they can get some turnovers that way. But, from a man, that's what I would hear from the opposing defenses that we played.
Of course, I mean, that's the unique part about it, because even, you know, you look at what Mike Martz was able to do with that offense. And, of course, you know, it was always going to be a guessing game because, I mean, he would, on a moment's notice, dig back in the playbook and have you do something you didn't even practice because, I mean, that's one of the things. Yeah. And so that unpredictability had to work to the benefit of the offense.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, it kept you on your toes from the standpoint where you had to be engaged in meetings. You had to be engaged in the walkthroughs and had to make sure that when that play came up, that you could process it in your mind, get lined up, and if there was any movement along with it. And most of the time it was the movement and the motions that changed. The play kind of stayed the same. So when he would call one of those plays, you had to really continue to think coming outside of the huddle. And you know, it was a little bit easier at home when you were doing that. But when you're playing in the Superdome and trying to compute and they're pumping in extra music, it took you a while. And as soon as sometimes you got to the line and said, oh, yeah, that's it. That's what I have. And bam, it's a touchdown.
Well, and that's the thing that's kind of fun about this is a fan, and I think probably the underappreciated part is that there's no question that you guys, you know, Falk, first round picks, Torrey Holt, yourself, and all that. I mean, you had such great talent and ability, but the minds to be able to make those type of adjustments, because there's very few. I know maybe Adam Gase may do that, but I don't think there's too many guys. I think maybe Matt Nagy in Chicago might do it a little bit now, but you know, have an 800 play playbook, but all the stuff that Martz would have, and of course, I mean, if you hadn't practiced it, he didn't care. He's going to throw the play out there, but the minds had to pick up, and the bodies had to react.
Well, that's the kind of guy that we started drafting, and the guys that we wanted to bring in. Funny thing about it, I watched these documentaries, and one was about James Brown, you know, the great singer and musician, the whole nine. And he would say, you know, to his drummer, this is a drum. He would say to his trumpeter, this is a drum, not a trumpet. These are drums, not horns. So they were all in one rhythm at the same beat. So I think Coach Martz, he trained all of us to have quarterback eyes. And once he got that part done and we could see the game the way a quarterback saw it, and he always reminded us, just play fast. So if we hear a play in a huddle, we couldn't compute it until we saw what we were facing as far as the defense was concerned. If I got a little hesitant in what I was doing, I would just go fast and make sure I was the best decoy for Torrey on that play or vice versa. So it was always about playing fast and having quarterback eyes.
Yeah, no doubt. And, of course, I mean, you look at your numbers, which were absolutely incredible. I mean, 14,109 yards, 942 receptions. I mean, single season was 1,781. And, obviously, you've been in the room now being discussed for years. And, hopefully, at some point, we can get you into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, John. I mean, I had a fabulous career. And I had fun doing what I was doing. I always like to say I had different eras and levels of playing football for the Rams. You know, when I first came in, we were vying for to be the worst team with the Cincinnati Bengals of the 1990s at that time. And, I was pretty much for a while just the single offensive productive guy for a while on that team, along with Jerome Bettis. But at that moment, it kind of grew once we started adding free agents. We drafted a guy like T. Hope, and we got that group together, man. I started having some great fun. The game became fun again. Things got easier for me. And, those numbers were actually predicated on the fun that I was having on the football field, man.
Is there one or two routes that you felt that you were as good as or better than any others?
Well, you know what? I had one of the best teachers in Henry Ellard. I mean, you go back and you look at his career. He's a guy that has over 800 career catches with 13,000 yards receiving. And, you know, it got to a point where, you know, he had the mindset of being a route connoisseur. He gave that to me. He gave that to Torrey. He gave that to Oz and Ricky Pro. We all had that same mindset because separation was big for us. We wanted to make sure that we were in and out of our breaks. Now, I would run a slant, which was pretty good, but the our money routes was the big 20-yard in route that, you know, people often imitate it, but they just couldn't duplicate it. And at the Pro Bowls and in the off seasons, you have offensive coordinators coming to myself, Torrey, and trying to get us to teach us how to run that route as proficient as we ran it. So that route and the comeback, I mean, the comeback, which was the 18-yard down the field and coming back on the outside, it's one of the routes that I felt like you just can't lose on. I mean, you push a guy off and get him off his grasp, or if the guy's running down the field with you, I felt like no one can get out of their break as fast as I could. So if a guy was as fast as me or faster than me, he just couldn't beat me out of my break. So the five route and the big four route, which we call the 20-yard end, those were money routes for me.
But how many seconds did that take for the quarterback to be able to? Is that like a 2.6 second play?
Well, I'll tell you what, like I said, Mike Martz had us all thinking like a quarterback. So we always threw to spots based on the coverage. So for me, the big four or the 20-yard in route, it was always my fifth outside step where I was breaking, and I'd be right there, 2 yards inside the numbers, and I'd be right there. Or if I was running that comeback, it was my fifth inside step where I'd push it up, and when I hit my fifth step, I was always coming back parallel to the sideline. So that probably gave Kurt or whoever was throwing the football about maybe 2.5 or 6 before he could let the ball go without a hitch.
That's remarkable because, again, the precision was there. How big was the playbook?
Oh, man, we had a pretty big playbook, man. From the old phone books that they used to give out, every county, every city used to send out every year, it was pretty much that thick. And what added to it was, like I say, a lot of the plays were similar, but the formations and the movements that were added, it made it even thicker. So to that point, you always had to be a certain type guy, you know, from a cerebral mindset to be able to take what's given to you in a meeting room and take it to a walkthrough and take it to a practice on the field. There were a lot of talented guys that had a lot of physical talents, but their makeup mentally, it just didn't allow them to play in our offense.
And I mean, you probably talk about this on the Run Pass Option podcast, but it's like, how much are you as a receiver enjoying the offensive infusion of some of the stuff coming in from college and now, you know, six young quarterbacks who are now in the playoffs?
You know what, John? I'm enjoying it, but at the same time, I'm like reminiscing about, oh man, if I played in this style of offense with the rules where you can't really touch these receivers, where you really can't tackle or take headshots at these receivers, I probably would have ended up with 20,000 career receiving yards and probably would still be thinking about playing because it's a different game. It looks fun. It looks like, the game where it can turn into a track meet at any certain time of any part of the game. So it's fun to watch. It's great to see these young quarterbacks like Mahomes, the way he can sling the football around. And I know Mike Martz is just loving what he sees from this young guy because, you know, he's everything that Mike Martz was training and developing every quarterback that he's had under his tutelage to be.
That's wild. In fact, I'm just thinking about that right now. That 20-yard in that you would make, I mean, there's no defenseless receiver rule to protect you. How many tough hits did you get on that one?
Well, listen, with the changing of the rules, with these guys not being able to lunge at you, not being able to leave their feet when they're tackling you, I took a ton of big hits, man. I can remember from back in the day when these guys would wear huge shoulder pads, like the Steve Atwaters, these guys who really made you respect the game. So, and I mean that from a standpoint where you're not just going to be running through the middle of the field fancy free because you got a guy like Lawyer Malloy sitting there who's going to make you pay for every catch that you attempt to make. And it's different, John. It's with the rule change right now. These guys have to think before they react as far as the defense is concerned. And this is an offensive guy talking to you, so my heart kind of goes out for these guys. So the competitive nature of it, it kind of swayed towards the offense and the receiver. But I took a ton of big hits, and I had to respect those guys and respect their jobs and had respect their turf, their part of the field.
Hey, as we wrap up here, I want you to talk a little bit about the Isaac Brooks Foundation that you started in 2006. What things do you do with the Isaac Brooks Foundation?
We do a lot of great things, and it's still based in the city of St. Louis, where we were committed to making a positive impact in the city of St. Louis initially, and it's starting to grow even now as I speak. So we have football camps, we have food drops, we do clothing drives, we have flag football tournaments, And one of the biggest things that we do, one of the programs, Flight 300, which is really close to my heart, we fly students who don't study in their hometowns to their cities where they do study. We buy them an airline ticket, those who can't afford it, train ticket, bus ticket, whatever kind of ticket it takes to get them to their college or university, wherever they're studying, and we get them there. We also provide Uber rides for them, and we also provide dorm decor for those who can't afford it. So it's very special, very dear to my heart. We're always looking for donations. You can always go to the isaacbruce.org and find out what's going on with the foundation if you want to donate and be a part of what we're doing. But we're continuing since 2006 to make a positive impact in the city of St. Louis and its surrounding areas via scholarships. And I think to this date, we've given away close to $500,000.
Isaac, that's fantastic. And of course, to get more of Isaac, you know, listen to the Run Pass Auction, the RPO with Marcus Doc Holliday. You can pick it up anywhere and of course, you got to listen. Hey, Isaac, looking forward to seeing you in Atlanta.
Thank you, sir.
And that does it for this week's podcast. In between episodes, you can follow me on Twitter at ClaytonESPN. If you enjoy these weekly one-on-one conversations, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Schooled with a Professor.